Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome to the FSHD Society Radio Show. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for being here on another episode as we have a great guest in store and excited to talk with her. But first, how do you want to get in touch with me here in the show? You can email me, fshdradio at fshdsociety.org is a great way. Follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can also go to fshdsociety.org. There's a show page on there. Learn more about the show and our sponsors and all those great things that we have for you there as well. Last month, we had an episode that was a lot of fun as we talked to Carlos Romero. He was the comedian talking about his FSHD life and all the things that he has done. You can find that episode out there still on fshdsociety.org as well as anywhere else you can find podcasts. We are on Spotify and Google and so many other platforms. Just search FSHD Society Radio and you'll find us there. But today is a new episode and we're so excited to bring in our next guest. You see her in the wings waiting. I know she's excited to join us. It's Haviv Nar David. Oh my gosh. Man, I think I just butchered it. We pre-talked about the pronunciation, and I did it badly anyway. I'll let you do your own introduction. Maybe that's the best way.
My name is Haviva Nair David.
That's Nair beautiful. David.
It's Hebrew.
So much better. Yes, it's Hebrew, and you say it so more eloquently than I could even attempt. So thank you for doing that for me and saving my butt. Thanks for being here. June Kinoshita, sent me your information and said this might be a great guest, and I think she's absolutely spot on because you are an author and you have a strong faith following that I think has helped you, guide yourself through FSHD. And there's so many things to kind of unpack and talk about, but I think the first thing I wanted to start with is a little bit about yourself and your FSHD story. So why don't we begin there?
Sure. So I should tell you when I was diagnosed, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so since I can remember and since my parents can remember, I had signs of FSHD in my face. I couldn't blow a balloon or pucker my lips, but they didn't think much of it. I didn't have anybody else in my family that we knew of with FSHD, so they had never heard of it. And I was born a month early, so they just kind of assumed it was because I was premature. Mm-hmm. And that was that until when I was a teenager, I couldn't lift my arms. And that was a sign that maybe there was something more serious going on. And I went from doctor to doctor and all kinds of tests, and nobody knew what was going on until an uncle of mine, who is a cousin actually, who's a pediatric neurologist, saw me and sent me to a doctor who he thought would be able to help. And as soon as I walked through the door, that doctor said to me, "Oh, you're here because you have FSHD." So that was how I was diagnosed. He could just tell from looking at my face.
Yeah, he could see it. And I think that's a not so common part of the story from what I've heard from people is that they usually have to go through doctor after doctor, or they're even misdiagnosed, or some are even kind of pushed off to the side, especially when they're younger. Oh, those are growing pains or this or that. And it's not really known what the issue is. It takes a long time. So in a way, that's a little bit of a blessing, right? That you had someone that could spot it immediately and say, I believe it's this. I had that similar positive diagnosis, I guess, if you want to call it that, where it was relatively quick once I got myself in front of the proper eyes. So that's good. Now, has FSHD been in your family, or are you spontaneous mutation, as they call it?
Well, they call it a spontaneous mutation. Nobody else was tested in my family, so we don't know for sure, but there were no apparent signs in anyone else necessarily. I mean, we could point to various different things, but nobody was tested, so we don't know. And but I have children. I have 7 children. One is adopted. We don't think he has it.
Sure.
If he does, that would be interesting. And of the other 6, 2 that we do know have FSHD, that they had signs, and so we had them tested, and they do have it.
And now, you do live in Israel, but you also have lived in the States a little bit, right? So tell us a little bit of your journey beyond the FSHD, and kind of, you know, where you've been and kind of where you are.
Yeah, so I actually grew up in New York. So that's where I was diagnosed, was in New York with Dr. Shapira at Einstein Hospital, I think it was, if I remember correctly. So that's where I grew up. That's where I was diagnosed. And I moved to Israel in my 20s. So that's the story of, you know, how I got here. And here, there weren't other people that I knew of, no kind of network or anything like that. When I was younger, there was the FSHD Society in America. And then when I moved to Israel, there was nothing. So my daughter, who is now 20, when she was graduating high school, of her senior year of high school, she had to do a project. And she chose to research FSHD and to write about her relationship with it and to do some inner work around it. She's a climber. Her name is Hallel. She's a climber. And so that was very, traumatic necessarily, but definitely significant, you know, to know that she had this, has this muscular disease. And she did this project. And then part of the project was to do something practical, to build something or do something. So she decided that she would start a FSHD group in Israel. And so we did that together. And now there is an FSHD Israel group. Wow. We've met a few times in person, and then COVID started. So we haven't met in person in over a year, I guess it is now. But we have a WhatsApp group, and people speak all the time on it, which is really, it's really, really nice. And everybody, as they join, they always, the thing that people always say is, I never met anybody else with FSHD. I didn't know who to speak to. So it's a great resource for people. And a bunch of great people anyway, just to know. So that's been a big change for us, is having other people in the country. And it's a very small country. Israel is, I think it's either the size of New Jersey or smaller than New Jersey.
Wow.
But it's very, very small. So, you know, when I say to have people around the country, really it's like having people, you know, just at the most a few hours drive away at the most. So.
So how many people are in the group currently, would you say, in Israel?
I'd say it's somewhere around 50, maybe. I think it's a less, but yeah. So we started with a handful. We started with me and my daughter, Hallel, and my son, who is younger than she is, wasn't interested in participating, not yet. Then the first thing we had, it was maybe 10 people at the most, 15. And it's just, you know, the second meeting we had was at least double that. And so it just keeps growing slowly as people join.
Yeah, it's what I find is really interesting is that your daughter's the one that kind of started the group. And then, of course, you were quickly involved as well. And has that been something that's kind of you know, bonded you both together, that you can work on this kind of project of this FSHD community in Israel together? Has that been I guess it might go without saying that it's been a positive experience for you both. But I'd love to hear, you know, how that's been with your mother-daughter relationship too.
Yeah. And we actually, we went to an international conference together in France.
Wow.
That I guess it was in the summer. So I guess it was maybe like, half a year before COVID or so. And so, yeah, we went to France together, which was definitely a fun bonding experience. And just building it together, working on it together, being able to talk about FSHD together, it's definitely been a bonding experience. Yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely. I wonder if some of my other kids, in some ways, I'm sure none of them wish they had FSHD for sure, but that special time that we went on this trip to France together, and it was like definitely a very unique thing, especially having seven children. I couldn't do that with every kid, or I'd spend my whole year traveling.
What was that experience like when you first met somebody else with FSHD? I know for so many it is a profound emotional experience that they almost don't expect until it starts to happen. I was curious to know your story on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I never met anyone with FSHD until I was in my 20s. And it was just by chance that I was working. I'm a rabbi. And at the time, I was working at a mikveh, which is a ritual immersion pool. And a woman came to convert to Judaism, and that's the ritual that you do at the end of your studying to become Jewish. And she was in a wheelchair, and you know, we were helping her get in. At the time, I could help somebody get into a, get out of a wheelchair and into a, into the water. And I didn't ask her the whole time what it was that she had, but then, you know, I noticed in her face that she had weakness in her face, and I said, "Wow, you know, I wonder if she has FSHD." So I asked her at the end of the whole ceremony. And she did. She had FSHD. Was that was the first person I met. And then I didn't meet anyone again until many years later. I went to the conference, the it's called FSHD Connect, I think. Conference in there was one in Boston a number of years ago. And I just happened to be visiting. I have a brother who lives in the Boston area, and I was visiting, and I it was a conference, and I said, "Oh, I guess this is a sign that I'm supposed to go to this conference." I hadn't really felt ready to do something like that before, and that was a real turning point for me. Walking to a hotel that was full of people with FSHD when I had only met this other woman before in my whole life was really definitely, as you said, you know, like a turning point and a very emotional. Just walking in and seeing these people who all looked like me, you know, we didn't have, we weren't from the same family. We didn't have the same genetic material, but they had these, all these characteristics that were like mine. And it's good I went alone because it really was a very, as I said, like emotional experience. And sitting in the workshops, talking to other people about FSHD. And after that conference, I really felt ready to face this, you know, to like to own it, I guess, more, to get involved, to speak about it publicly, that meeting all those and really inspiring people, really, really inspiring people. And I'll say also in the, now I'm also, because I'm, I represent the Israel group or chapter, you know, we have these meetings. And there was the one in France, and now we've had on online these Zoom meetings as well. And it's really, like I said, this feeling of family that we get on this Zoom, and other people with FSHD from around the world, we all have these similar characteristics. And so it's kind of like this family that of this international family of people who kind of look alike and have this actual genetic thing in common. So I find that really fascinating, actually, to think about that there's this thing that can connect us all, even though we're not really, you know, we're not related, we might even speak the same language. So that's, it's, you know, I guess a silver lining of the whole experience of having FSHD is that human connection that you can have with all these other people like you.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, like I said before, you know, it's very emotional, profound. It's it kind of catches you off guard. I know I didn't expect that either. Kind of similar story to yourself, meeting people for the first time. Do you find though, and similar to myself and others, that FSHD, if there is, as you mentioned it, like a silver lining or something that at least you can take as a positive, that it's kind of made you a little, I don't know, not that you were a bad person before, but even better, you know, like even better. It kind of gives you that better sense of empathy or the struggle of another human because you have a struggle, you know. Have you found that's done that for you?
Absolutely. I notice other people's, I don't know if I want to use the word disability, but, you know, challenges, I guess, much more, and I'm much more sensitive to them. And of all types, you know, not just muscular issues. And in general, just, I think knowing also that the sort of knowing lack of control maybe that we have over our lives that we all have. And I think that all people are aware or should be aware of their mortality because all humans are mortal. Mm. But I think people who at a young age, you know, at age 16, when I was diagnosed, that just like hit me over the head that time's ticking away. You don't know how long you're going to be able to do the things you do and like to do. And to just really keep all of that in perspective, which I think a teenager does not usually have that that attitude towards life, just the opposite. You know, this sort of invincible teenager attitude is not what I had. So I had to grow up very quickly. And I, you know, I ended up getting married young at 21 and having, you know, my seven kids and even adopting one of them. And just realizing that there are things I want to do in this life, that I better just get going and do them. Mm. And in my bio, you know, from my book, so I write at the end of all my bios, you know, I write that I live with FSHD, and which has been one of my greatest teachers. And I really do believe that just living with a degenerative, especially, you know, disease is a teacher, has been for me, definitely, just about the value of life and time and relationships.
Like, seize the moment.
It doesn't mean that if there's a cure, that I wouldn't want to benefit from that, because I would. I definitely would. But since there isn't, I might as well learn what I can from the disease.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's like, you're right. You kind of make the best of the situation that you've been handed, the cards that you've been dealt, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that line. I wrote it down. FSHD is the greatest teacher. I like that one. So I'm stealing that, by the way. So that's a good line. It's a good nugget.
Sure.
Of wisdom.
I used to say the greatest teacher, and then I changed it to one of my greatest teachers, because I didn't want to offend anyone else. Yeah.
You alluded to the fact that, you are an author, and I know we have a new book that you have out to talk about, but you've written a couple of memoirs. Talk a little bit about that, about your writing career.
Actually, interestingly, it connects, because I've written two memoirs already, and a third that's going to be published after, you know, this novel was just published, but then I have this third memoir that I already wrote as well. And It's funny because I wrote the first memoir when I, let's see, it came out in 2000 and I'm now 52. So how old was I then?
This is on you. You're aging yourself. I'm not.
Whatever.
You
I
are
don't know. I
younger.
was young then.
Yeah.
I don't know. In the year 2000, how old was I? Well, I don't know. What is it? 30 or something? Is that
Yeah,
right?
your
I don't know.
30s, right?
And this was funny, kind of, like people say, oh, you wrote a memoir when you were 30 years old. But yeah, it's all about the journey, and so different stages of the journey. So the first two memoirs are about different life phases, and the third is also. And this is my the novel that just came out, Hope Valley.
Hope Valley,
Oops,
yep.
here it is. Yeah. And that's my first novel. And the truth is, I have a degree in creative writing. But even though I studied creative writing and thought I would write fiction, I just felt really drawn to memoir at first, and that's what I was writing, like creative fiction. No, I mean creative nonfiction, I guess it's called, just memoir. And this book, this is the first time I decided to really to tackle fiction, and it was a real learning curve. It took me from the time I did the first draft till now when it's out, it's been about 8 years.
Wow.
And this is, I guess, one of those things too, where we talked about, just a minute ago about things you want to accomplish. So writing a novel was something I always wanted to accomplish. And it felt like, as you said, seize the moment when I had the idea for it. And now I'm really glad because I'm starting to feel weakness in my hands. And, I don't know. I don't know if I'll always be able to keep writing and typing. And so I'm feeling really good about this, that it's that I did it. And here it is. Yeah.
Yeah, accomplishment is huge. Like, right, you set that goal, you really wanted to do it, and you wrote Hope Valley, which is a great story about two women. So without being, I don't want any spoiler alerts here. We want people to purchase and read it. We don't want to give too much away, but tell us a little bit about the current book, Hope Valley.
Yeah, so actually one reason why it's even relevant was I'll tell you the story of how I thought of the idea, which was that I was walking, I live on a kibbutz, which is it's a well I live on it's in north I live in northern Israel, let's just say. I live in northern Israel in a rural kind of area, and there's a valley that separates my kibbutz, which a kibbutz classically was kind of more of like a communal type agricultural community. But ours has already been privatized, so it's somewhat communal. It's more like an intentional community that you have in the States. So I was there's a valley that separates my kibbutz, which is a Jewish village, from this Palestinian-Israeli village across the valley. And so I was walking in the valley with my dog, and I saw a shepherd who I would see often in the valley with his flock. But this time he was with his wife as well, and I had never seen his wife with him before. I assumed it was his wife. And I went over to him to say hello, and he introduced me to her. And she asked me how old I was, and I told her. And she started to cry, and she said that there she had a daughter who was my age who died of breast cancer. And I started to ask her more about her. And when we parted, I had this feeling that I really would have wanted to have met her daughter, and that we could have maybe connected over this, what I was talking about before, this idea of time, and illness, and the area where I live in, and in Israel in general, the sectors are quite segregated. And it was, this thought that we could connect over this shared something that really got me thinking about, well, let's say I had met her. And the book is about a friendship between a Jewish Israeli woman with multiple sclerosis, not FSHD, and a woman, a Palestinian Israeli woman who has cancer. And that is one of the themes in the book. It's not the whole book, but one of the themes in the book is this idea of connecting in that way across cultural divides and religious and national and divides. So that part of me, part of my motivation for writing the book too, was my own kind of exploring this idea of connecting in this way with someone, but also, and I was able through the character who has MS, not FSHD, and I did that on purpose just because in fiction, you do need the distance from your characters, and she's not me. In a lot of ways, she's not me. So I purposely chose a different disease, but one that was somewhat similar. And I think also sometimes people confuse, when I say I have musculodystrophy, like often people would think that I'm saying I have
MS,
that I
right?
have MS, sorry.
No, it's okay. I get that
Multiple
all the time.
sclerosis. Thank
Yeah,
you.
I get that all the
Yeah.
time.
You
Yeah.
also get that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like,
Yeah.
no, I feel
So
bad for
I've
those people, but I have this. Yeah.
exactly. So I figured, okay, that would be a good thing. Anyway, I learned more about multiple sclerosis when I was writing it. And so, but the same idea, I think the main point being about this idea of not knowing the future, not knowing what, and nobody, as I said, nobody knows your future. You could be in a car accident tomorrow. But when you live with this disease, or if also with multiple sclerosis, this idea that you could have an episode at any time, or with FSHD, where I find that I have these periods of deterioration, you just don't know when they're gonna come next. Like I remember that my doctor, when I was diagnosed at 16, had said to me, "Oh, you could be in a wheelchair, way off at some point." And then I remember when I was walking one day, however many, many years later, like I think I was in my 30s, and noticing that my legs were feeling heavy. I have dropped foot in both of my feet. And that, like, you probably know what I'm talking about, where all of a sudden you notice
You notice it,
something,
right?
and you're like, okay, this is, so now I'm in the next, now I'm in the next stage. So I just remember that walking, and I was like, because I was tripping a lot, and then all of a sudden it just dawned on me. I'm like, oh, I'm tripping a lot because of FSHD. I have weakness in my legs. So yeah, so the same thing, like with noticing now about my hand, where it's like, oh, I'm not just tired, my hands are actually weak, and so, which I didn't have before. So in the book, yeah, that she, through her, through Tikva, who is the Jewish character who has MS, I could explore this idea of the not knowing, and the two women could share that together, because also Ruby, who has cancer, she also doesn't know, how much time she has left. So the two of them, there's that bonding through that.
Yeah, because even despite the fact that one's Israeli, Jewish Israeli, and one's Palestinian Israeli, they're different, right? That's the divide there, but their commonness within the MS in one, cancer in the other, kind of the tie that binds kind of thing. Here's our common ground. Do you find then, I mean, the fact that you wrote a book that pain or the facing of mortality is common and should be to everybody, despite the fact if you have a disease or not, or you're struggling with something immediately right now or not. Do you find then that your message even goes beyond, that maybe as a bigger, broader picture of human race, for instance, we have to be a little more together than so divided.
Absolutely. That's one of my very strong beliefs in life. And living in this country where there is a lot of conflict, I'm involved with a lot of peace work and shared society work, it's called here. And absolutely, also I was ordained as a rabbi, but also as an interfaith minister. And that's a big piece of it. One thing that really pushed me to go study for interfaith ordination at a later stage in my life was this idea that religion, you know, if it's something that divides us, then what is it worth? Right. You know, it should be something that to find the thing, the connectors, to find the right things that we all believe, that we all share. And I totally do see that as a common theme in my approach to life. And I think I've, you know, always been, as far back as I remember, that's been my, I say that I have like a universalist soul. So it's always looking for the connectors and not the dividers.
Yeah, I wish that people would think more that way as a whole in general. Instead of the things that separate us, what are the things that we have in common? And I'm really glad you wrote this book, because I think that kind of brings that out. Would you find then that Hope Valley is also a good book for a young reader? You know, I always believe that if we can teach this early on, it's less of a condition that's been created as you get older. You know, seeing differences, I think it can be taught to not, you know, to see differences can be taught just as easy it can be to see, as you said, the connectors, the things that connect us. So do you think that a book like this would be a possible good, you know, even though it's a a novel, you can still learn from it? So do you find that this book could be appropriate for that?
Yeah, well, for the, you said for younger people too.
You know,
so
teenage, maybe.
I mean, it wasn't written for a young adult audience, but it's interesting. I was just thinking recently about that, because it's about adults and the characters are middle age, and you know, and that's what I was identifying with and when I wrote it.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's pretty wholesome in some ways. You know, it's, there's a little bit of violence. But you know, it's I do think that actually I've been thinking about that, and I do think that young adult people who, like late teens probably, and definitely 20, you know, for sure that, but I think even a mature young adult reader, like, I think young adult usually means like YA, you know, that's, I think of really more like teenagers and young adult. But when you say young adult, I mean, when I say
that's
young adult
in
general, I think more of like 20s. But yeah, in reading, it usually means more like teenagers. But it could be.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, you might be onto something here. So.
I do, yeah. No, it's true. I have some teens in my house, and I've been waiting to read it, to read it in print. So yeah,
exciting.
They didn't
want
to read
good.
It online. Yeah. So,
Now, you talked about being a rabbi, the faith side of your life. How important has that been in coping and dealing with FSHD?
So I think definitely the looking for a kind of spiritual comfort was definitely a tendency, you know, is my tendency in life, you know, to look for some kind of spiritual comfort, but not easy answers, you know, not sort of like, well, definitely not, you know, this is the punishment from God, that one for sure doesn't sit with me. And even when people say, like, there's a saying, I don't know if you've heard it, of God only gives you what you can deserve, what you can deal
what you
with,
can
or what you
handle.
can,
Yeah.
how does it go? God only gives you what you can manage or take, or
Yeah,
that
basically. I've heard
one.
that one. I don't know if I believe that one either.
So yeah, that one doesn't sit with me either exactly, not in those words, because I don't see it as something necessarily that was given to me. It's more like the way you said before, of these are the cards that you're dealt, and then it's your responsibility to just do with it what you can.
Yeah.
So definitely not as a punishment, maybe as a learning. I could see that
Right.
maybe, but I don't want to put any like human characteristics on the divine force,
Right.
in the universe. So, but I can't. My approach that I like to take more is what you said of, okay, this is the situation. What can I make of it? This is what can I learn from it? What can I make the best of it? How can I grow from it? And this other one thing that really I found helpful is this idea of also surrendering to what is. So I would say that that's been definitely a struggle for me since I was diagnosed. I think when I was first diagnosed, actually we didn't had anorexia for a while when I was a teenager after I was diagnosed. And I for sure know that that was about trying to have some control over my body when I discovered that really I didn't have the control I thought I had as a
Right.
teenager.
Wow.
And so that whole struggle with anorexia, I think, was definitely about that. And just slowly, as as I'm getting older and over the years, just slowly learning to surrender to and realize that I don't really have the control that I had or that I thought I had, before I was diagnosed. And instead of trying to fight that, to just try to accept it and surrender to it. So there's that, I'd say that kind of spiritual posture of surrender and accept what is and make the best of what is one learning that I've definitely adopted, through studying, through spiritual practice and study. And on the other side of that, balancing with it, like this strong Jewish teaching of, if not now, when, which is it's a saying in the ethics of our fathers, of the Hillel, I think it is, who says, yeah, who says, the sage Hillel says, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? And if I am only for myself, who am I? And if not now,
Not now,
when?
when?
So those three principles, self-care and compassion for others, and seize the moment,
Right.
of like make something of your life, make your mark here, figure out what your mission is and do it. That's a strong principle that I grew up with in my Jewish upbringing. And I'd say, kind of balancing those principles, those strong Jewish principles of, self-care, compassion, and making, making your mark and making the world a better place when you leave it. That balanced with this, more of maybe Buddhist idea of surrendering to what is. Those are definitely things that I carry with me all the time, and that I can't say that I've mastered any of it, but I'm definitely trying to, trying to do my best.
Yeah.
All our best. And so, yeah, trying to do my best at that. So it's that's a life learning and struggle.
No, that's you had a lot a lot of wisdom in those words that you were talking there, and even the line of, you know, if not now, when. We've heard, you know, Mark Stone say something like that of the FSHD Society, kind of empowering people to, mm-hmm. you know, get the message out. And that, of course, helps with funding, which, of course, helps with finding a cure, treatment, something for us, and, you know, pushing hard for that goal. So it's very interesting that you bring that specific line up, because I think that tailors right into what we're all trying to accomplish. If not now, like, what are we waiting for, right? We have to be stronger and do all these things now. Not just what you mentioned earlier of, you know, acting on things you want to accomplish before you can't, you know, before this disease takes that ability away. I know that I've had that struggle too, where it feels like as soon as I was diagnosed, I swear I heard someone start a countdown. I have no idea what the final countdown, you know, number is or how much time I have, but it feels like I have this anxiety to, like, get as much as I can accomplish. So I can totally relate to all the things that you're saying there. When has the book Hope Valley been released now? Is it available for people to purchase?
Yeah, it just came out, actually. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds different now.
Oh.
So yeah, it just came out. Is it all right?
Yep. Yeah, I can still hear you through. Yep.
Oh, we're okay. Okay. Yeah, the book just came out in print now this week. And what else? So it can be bought on Amazon.
Okay.
Or anywhere, you know, Marvel or all these different online booksellers. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll show it to you again. Yeah. So if you Google the title and my name, you'll find it.
Yeah, people do that. It's Bedazzled Ink Publishing LLC. Looks like published the book as the publisher, and
Bedazzled Ink. Yeah, Bedazzled Ink Publishing. They're a small press in California.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very grateful to them. Mm-hmm.
Now, a final question I have for you is, and I like to ask this, especially those that have FSHD, and you've kind of alluded to that advice of this question I'm going to ask already a little bit, but to sum up, if someone's listening to this and they were just recently diagnosed, mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, it's so much a personal journey. So I know for myself, I wasn't ready really to meet others. I was even scared to meet others because of this idea of that maybe I would see my future. And I remember when I was diagnosed and the Dr. Shapiro told my parents about the FSHD Society, and they signed up for, you know, they became members and they used to get the newsletters. And I saw the newsletters in my house.
Mm-hmm.
It was really traumatic for me. I saw people much further along in the disease than I was at the time. And even there was even an obituary for someone who had died. I remember my doctor saying that people die from FSHD. Mm. I think I remember him saying, you know, like, the worst case scenario, you know, you'll be in a wheelchair when you're much older. So that was news to me. And you know, I think part of the advice is, you know, is to just take it slowly at your own pace. And I can say I was ready, meeting other people and speaking is really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, it's not everybody's going to be ready for that right away. And it's in some ways, as I said, it's like a family in some ways, but you're not, necessarily ready to meet the in-laws yet, or it's
Right.
so it's yeah, it's so that's the two things. One is just to take it at your own pace. On the other hand, that it can be really, really helpful to meet other people, to know that you're not alone. That feeling of being alone is really scary. And especially if you're in a family like where I was, where there weren't other people. So then it's especially scary because you hear that you have this thing that you've never even heard of before.
Right.
And you don't know anything about it, and you're just all alone in it. But on the other hand, so now I have two kids with it, and that's the flip side of that, is that they know maybe a little too much too soon, because they grew up with me and always knowing, that I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And then when they discover that they have the same thing that I do, they know a lot about it already,
Right.
and that can also be scary in its own way. So I guess there isn't necessarily a better case scenario, but each one has its challenges and difficulties and benefits, because on the other hand, I can educate them about it. They didn't go through what I went through, which was all this not knowing and being misdiagnosed and just nobody being able to say what was wrong, but I knew I couldn't lift my arms. Like,
Right.
there's something wrong here. No, people weren't able to tell me what it was. So at least put I remember when putting when I was diagnosed, it was this double feeling of, it was on the one hand a relief to be able to put a name on it, and on the other hand, it was really scary to know that it was a really serious thing. That it, I thought it was something wrong with my arms or something. I didn't think it was something that was going to be my whole body eventually. So it
Right.
was really scary. It was really, definitely really scary. So maybe if I had been expecting that maybe this is something I'll have from an early age, then I maybe would have been preparing myself for it too. So there's the flip sides. There's, as I said, the benefits and the thinking of what's the English way, thinking of the English word for that, the opposite of benefit.
Oh, well, the
The
negative maybe, or the struggle. Yeah, there's a lot you
negative.
could choose there. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, it's like,
So, yeah.
I kind of see what you're saying, that in one case you have this, if you have someone in your life that has it, you kind of see what's coming, a little foreshadowing there. And then you have another situation where if you are the mutation, you live both. I mean, you've seen at least from both sides. And if you're the only one, then you have this sense of alone and no one understands. And I think there's a lot of people listening that can relate to both sides of that for sure. So I think that you've made a connection right there. I think you found a lot of connectors for people just in giving
Yeah.
that advice or those words of wisdom for sure. Thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks for coming on the show, talking about your book, your life, sharing so much of that with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. So yeah, if you guys want to buy the book, it's out there, Amazon, any place you find books. It's all brought to you by the Bedazzled Inc. Publishing out of California. Was there one final question
Oh,
that I actually
actually,
had?
yeah.
Yeah,
Oh,
was
yeah.
if like you had a website
Well,
or something for people to find more out even about you or
yeah,
where can they find you?
I do. I have a website. My website is rabbichaviva.com, which is RABBIHAVIVA.com, rabbichaviva.com. I'm a spiritual companion. I do spiritual companion work, and you can find that on there too.
Oh, cool.
I actually do work with a bunch of people who have various different disabilities or a challenge with it, however you want to name it, but not only. So yeah, I do a lot of spiritual companionship work, and you can find that all there. I do a lot, most of it over Zoom, in fact, so with people all over the world. And something also about the book, when you said about finding it in various places where there are books. So as of now, I only know being in places that if you go into a bookstore, you can ask them to carry it. So all of you people out there, you know, if you go into your local bookstore and tell them that you want them to carry this book, then they'll, you know, maybe they will.
Maybe they will, right.
So definitely. And me, you know, me being in Israel, it's definitely very helpful for me to have people in English-speaking countries.
Absolutely. Telling
bookstores to carry the book. So thank you. If you, all of my FSHD.
That's right. We're
people
an army
out there.
Yes,
if you want to help.
That sounds like a good idea. thank you again. Appreciate your time. This is a great conversation I've had with you, and I hope everybody else has enjoyed it. And we'll all go find our copies of Hope Valley and learn more about you as well. Thanks again.
Thank you.
So we can take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about what's coming up for the FSHD Society and those great things. But here's a word from our sponsor. Today's podcast is sponsored by PerkinElmer Genomics, a market leader in biochemical and genomic testing solutions. PerkinElmer Genomics understands that obtaining a confirmed genetic diagnosis for FSHD can be difficult and frustrating experience for both patients and their families. That's why their laboratory prides itself on launching new and innovative technologies to help families find answers that they are looking for. Just over a year ago, PerkinElmer Genomics introduced the first new diagnostic approach to FSHD type 1 genetic testing in nearly three decades. This testing has drastically decreased the time to diagnose while increasing accessibility to patients. Knowing the underlying cause of FSHD can have important implications for the entire family, including help with future medical management decisions. Speak with your provider today and learn more about how you can get testing. Visit PerkinElmerGenomics.com to find out more about available testing options for FSHD and other related neuromuscular disorders that may help you and your family today. That's PerkinElmerGenomics.com. All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us here. We've had a great conversation with our guest. I'm so happy that she got to join us all the way from Israel. And as you are watching this, you know this has been a pre-recorded interview. So because of that big time difference, it seemed to be the best way to do it. But you can find your copy of Hope Valley. Go to Amazon. It's probably your best start. Ask for it in your bookstores if you can. That would be a huge plug. Kind of get our FSHD army to help get that book out and to, you know, just get it out there. I think it's going to be a great book to learn about the connections. How can we make those connections? What can we do about, you know, finding the common with people instead of always the negative? I know here in the States, it seems like there's a lot of negative findings in comparison to common. Before we let you go, though, of course, we always want to talk a little bit about the news and events coming up, mostly events coming up here in the FSHD area. So if you go to FSHDSociety.org, you will find all this information, like the next FSHD U event coming up. And that's going to be a learning and discovery testing and researcher's journey into FSHD with Angela Leck, a PhD, who will share her scientific journey as an FSHD researcher. Leck has researched, she's a research scientist out of Yale Medical School with a strong passion in understanding how genetic defects lead to muscle wasting and discovering opportunities for how to treat them. So she's going to join us there on that FSHDU. Find out exact time, and I believe it starts at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm scrambling to find the exact date, but you can visit fshdsociety.org right now to learn more and pull that information up faster probably than I can. On Tuesday, April 27th, there is a join us on Zoom meeting here for the St. Louis chapter gathering with Michelle Melian from Fulcrum Therapeutics. She'll be there to present her topics of how MRIs are affecting and helping with FSHD. So take a look at that. That is on Tuesday, April 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Central Time. And then the Caregiver Sharegiver Hour, also on the 27th from 8 to 9 p.m. with Sue Drescher and others that talk a little bit about not just the person with FSHD, but our caregivers. So it's a Caregiver Sharegiver Hour, and people join in and talk a little bit about their story and a little bit of a comforting hour to share with each other. To learn more, visit fshdsociety.org. I believe you might have to pre-register for that event. Really special thank you again to Harviva Nar David, and I know she pronounces her own name better than I do, but I do my very best. But I really enjoyed the conversation with her today. I had a pre-show conversation with her prior, and also is just equally as blown away of all the great lessons that she can give us. And I think you can find a lot of those nuggets of wisdom in her book, Hope Valley, which you can find on Amazon and other places as well. Publisher there is Bedazzled Inc. Publishing LLC out of California. So next week we will have another fantastic guest on the docket. And you want to know who that will be? Well, we're going to kind of hang it out there and tease it for a little bit. We don't have it quite solid into the books yet. So if you want to learn more as that next show event approaches, go to fshdsociety.org. That's the best way. You want to reach out to me, you can do that, of course, at fshdsociety.org, or you can go on the radio show page there, or you can email me, fshdradio at fshdsociety.org. I had a great email from Paul in the UK, so shout out to him for emailing me and making a great connection there. I appreciate that, and keep listening and watching the show. You can find past episodes either through YouTube on the FSHD Society's channel or anywhere you find podcasts. So till next month, take care and be well. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.